Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing healthcare coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capitalbluecross.com. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC, offering services for athletes at every level and age. More information can be found at upmc.com/centralpaortho.
Journalists in the United States have come under criticism and have been targeted verbally and sometimes physically in a highly politically charged society. But the First Amendment, freedom of the press, is still one of the fundamentals that makes America different. All one has to do is look to our south in Mexico, where even many journalists take bribes. Regina Martinez was not one of them, and her aggressive reporting on corruption may have gotten her killed. Former Associated Press Mexico Bureau Chief Catherine Corcoran has written a new book, In the Mouth of the Wolf, A Murder, A Cover-Up, and the True Cost of Silencing the Press. And we're joined by Catherine Corcoran. Welcome to the program. So why did you want to write this book?
Thank you very much, Scott. I wanted to write this book because I wanted to show the importance of a free press and what happens to a society when you shut it down, when you quiet the free press. Also, I wanted to find out what happened to her. It was a very controversial case and there was clearly a cover-up. And so I wanted to see if I could find out what really happened.
So before we talk about the case in Regina Martinez, I just want to kind of go back to something you just said, and it explains why this is relevant to American readers, right?
Yes, because with the attacks against the press in the United States right now, which I've been a journalist for decades, are really unprecedented. It's now it can be dangerous to go out and be a reporter in the United States because now you are targeted for being a journalist in a way that never happened before. And as you mentioned, they're verbal threats, but also physical attacks. And so what I wanted to show was a society where the journalists are basically terrorized. They either have to leave or self-censor in order to protect their own lives. And what happens in a society where that situation exists, because there is a void of real information, of reported information, of independent voices, of critical voices. And it allows, in the case of the book, a criminal government to basically prey on its own citizens. And so the result of silencing the press is not really hitting the press. It's hitting the society. It's controlling the society and what the society can know and what the society can do. And so I think it's very important for people to understand that when someone attacks the press, we're just the first line of attack. We're not the target. You're the target. The society is the target.
You know, one of the things that struck me about your book is just how corrupt Mexico is. I mean, when you have journalists who are on the take and you all levels of government, the police, the military, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, which country is the most corrupt in the world. But you worked in Mexico for a long time. Can you describe the level of corruption there?
Well, it is a terrible problem there. The current president says he's trying to end corruption and that there's no longer impunity in Mexico, but that couldn't be farther from the truth. The problem is that in the press corps was controlled by the government for many decades. That Mexico was ruled by a single party authoritarian system. And so that system controlled the press. And in order to keep the press in line for decades, they paid people to write good stories. The government gave reporters money to buy homes, all kinds of gifts and bribes. And so when this system broke up in 2000 and Mexico became more electorally democratic, the press also was opening up as well. And the press was becoming more independent, more professional, more critical. But the vestiges of the old system still exist. And although I have to say it's changing, and the press in Mexico really has become more independent rapidly, and is becoming more of a watchdog all the time. So, but it, what happened was under this system of control, the president of Mexico controlled everything, including the organized crime, and controlled all the governors and controlled everything. And so when that system broke up, the power decentralized, and it gave both politicians and organized crime the opportunity to cut deals on a local level and cut all kinds of new deals because there wasn't the central control. And without that central control, some of these state governments have become their own criminal enterprises. And it's really sad because the people are suffering. And there are people who just want to go to work every day and send their kids to school and live their lives. And they have to work around these systems of corruption.
So let's talk about Regina Martinez. What kind of journalist was she?
Well, I always say she was ahead of her time because, as I described the system of a controlled press, she started reporting in the 80s, in the 1980s. And from the very beginning, she was a different kind of reporter. She was a reporter who didn't accept the official story. She was a reporter who went out into the street and also traveled to remote parts of the state to actually talk to people and see what was going on. She was a reporter who wanted to verify everything she wrote, not just print hearsay. She looked for documents. She was the kind of reporter that we would consider to be doing good, great journalism here in the United States. But there at that time, it was very unusual, especially for an outlying state. In Mexico City, the press had become more and more professional in the large media organizations with resources. But out in the states, in these smaller media, smaller newspapers, she was very unusual. And for that reason, she attracted attention from the very beginning of her career, and it was not good attention.
Why couldn't she be bought?
That's a great question. She grew up in a very strict household, and her father set the example because her father could not be bought. Her father drove, before there were armored cars, her father drove money around for the bank. That was his job. And he was very proud of the fact that never a single peso went missing when he was driving money around. And he really drilled that into his children, the importance of honesty and the importance of not doing what other people were doing in terms of like being bought and taking things that you didn't earn.
Your book is unique in that the crime isn't solved. You know, as you were writing, and there's one clue after another, you talk to many more people. I mean, it's been described as a whodunit, but you don't come up with, there wasn't an arrest, you don't come up with who actually killed Regina. Talk about that.
Well, I think what I did come up with is a new line of investigation, some new evidence that was never investigated. And there were various rumors and suspects, but I found something that was more concrete that I think that investigators could follow. I'm obviously not a detective. I don't have the power to subpoena. I don't have the power to see the evidence. I asked for the evidence through public records requests, and I was denied. And so I had to piece together everything from the reporting the best that I can. And I do think I ended up pointing in one direction. I think part of the story was how difficult that was to do in a society where people are literally terrorized and afraid to talk, and where there is no, as I said, no independent voice, no reported information. And so it's very hard to find the truth. And that's really the cautionary tale for the rest of the world, including the United States. is, do we want to have a system where we know there no longer is truth? And the journalists, the press, who do have standards, who do have ethics, we do verify what we report, where we're completely discredited and completely ignored and denied, or and or literally terrorized from being able to practice journalism.
Were you afraid? Were you in danger?
Me personally, I took very serious security precautions to do this kind of work. I always say that I was more concerned about the people who were talking to me. It was much more dangerous for them. And I think they were the brave people in this story because they did talk and they wanted to see the truth get out.
Why do you think that they were more danger? Because you were an American journalist and it would have raised more attention if you would have been harmed in some way?
Exactly. The attacks on the press in Mexico tend to be very much toward local journalists. And that's one reason why this case got so much attention, because she worked for a national magazine. These forces that want to silence the press, they rarely even go after national correspondents because it makes too much noise. What they're trying to do is get silence. And so so they go after local reporters who live there, whose families are there, who have a lot of reason to be afraid, and or who have to leave sometimes for their own safety. And so to go after me would make too much noise. But a way to get me to stop doing my work would be to go after somebody that I'm talking to or who's talking to me.
We were talking before the break about how you use sources. And that is one of the great parts of the story, is how you hooked up with so many people, got to know so many people who knew Regina Martinez, people who were actually honest or semi-honest journalist or others who work with her and led you in certain directions to try to solve the case. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, I was fortunate, and this was purely a coincidence. When I was at the AP, I hired one of her closest friends, not knowing that at all, to be a stringer, a collaborator in the state of Veracruz to write for the AP from that state. And we got to know each other. We got to trust each other as journalists and had a really good working relationship. And I had told him that the story was kind of living in the back of my head. When I was bureau chief, I didn't really have time to do anything with it. But I just mentioned it, and then it kind of went away till I had time to think about it. And so by the time that I was ready to write the story, he and I knew each other very well. And so he became an entree for me into her inner circle. Her inner circle didn't talk to anyone. They didn't do interviews. They knew it was dangerous to talk. And when I approached them, they decided that, you know what, we really do want the story to get out. And because I had his confidence, he helped me gain the confidence of other people. And as you mentioned, it was a small circle, but it was a very trusted circle, and it was her trusted circle. She kind of created this circle of friendship as part of her protection. And so so in all this maze, someone called it the Hall of Mirrors. I encountered a Hall of Mirrors. They were really my my beacons. They really helped me try to keep the story straight.
But there is, so as I said, it was described as a whodunit, because you know, the way I looked at the book, when I read the book, I thought to myself, this is something, a perfect document for a journalism student, someone who wants to be an investigative journalist, because, you know, step by step by step, you lead the reader through, you know, what your clues were, who you were talking to, sources, some sources you named, other sources you didn't. I mean, it just was an exercise in great journalism.
Well, thank you. I wanted, one of my purposes for writing this book is to show people what journalists do. I think that people don't really understand what we do. And I think that's one of the things that makes us a very easy target. They can just look at us and say, oh, the mainstream media or the press is bad, the press is negative, the press is sensationalist. And I think, you know, obviously in some cases that's true, but I think that people are ignoring the good information that they receive every day from journalists to live their lives and make decisions. And that is getting lost in this press bashing. And so I wanted to show through Rahina what journalists do when we do our jobs well, what role we play and how important that is, and how and what happens when it goes away. But I also wanted to explain to the average person how we do our work, because we do have standards, we do verify things, we do have certain ways of producing our information that's different from all the other things that you're seeing out there on social media, on talk shows, on all the things that get called the media. And the good journalists who are uncovering things that you need to know, or who are just telling you how to get through your day, get lumped in with all that. And I really wanted to explain to people what we do and how we do it.
I'm glad you pronounced Rahina's name, the Latino pronunciation, the correct pronunciation, because I anglicized it throughout our program. So it was Rahina.
Well, that's okay.
Rahina that's okay. Martinez. So I'm going to ask you a question. I'm sure everyone has asked you this since you've written the book. Who do you think killed Rahina Martinez, and for what?
Well, I point to a person and evidence in the end of the book. I don't have it nailed down. Honestly, I don't want to libel anyone in that situation. But I think she was killed because she had some very sensitive and explosive information about a powerful person. And I think that powerful person found out about it. And there's some dispute among her colleagues whether she was actually planning to publish it or not, because some said she was, that she was actively working on this. And others said no, that she had come to the point where she realized this situation was just too dangerous. And she told people that she didn't want to investigate anymore, that she wanted to pull back. She maybe wanted to cover other topics. And so it's not clear that she was actually working on it as to publish, but it is pretty clear that she knew it, and other people found out that she knew it.
Are you referring to the number of missing people, people who just disappeared in Mexico?
No, that was when another group of journalists said that's what she was working on. And that's one of the angles I investigated, because I thought that for a while, too. And I followed that to the end and I decided, no, that it wasn't that, because the information that she had on the mass graves, she had published. This was something else, if you recall, in the end of the book about some politicians possibly involved in drug trafficking in some of the local bars. Mm. And that's, I can't libel anyone, but that's what I put in the end of the book.
How many journalists, and I'm not looking for a running tally, but it is not unusual, I should say, for journalists to be killed in Mexico, correct?
Oh, it's a terrible problem. I mean, this year there are various counts by different organizations, because it'll be depending on whether they think that murder had to do with their work as a journalist or not. So the count is anywhere from 13 to more than 15 this year, in 1 year, and we're only in October. And when I started writing this book, the count was more like 6, 7, it was 10 the year that I became bureau chief. And to me, that was shocking. And now it's up to 15. And so and it's worse than anywhere in the world and supersedes war zones. And so that was another reason why I wanted to write about this, because nothing was being done about it. It's getting worse. And I just thought, if I can bring this to a wider audience and just bring more awareness, because there doesn't seem to be any political will inside the country to really do anything about this.
We're almost out of time. I want to thank Catherine Corcoran for being with us today. In about 30 seconds or less, what would you like readers to take away from the book?
I would like readers to understand the importance of a free press and what you will lose if you lose the free press, what freedoms you will lose if you don't have the free press.
Catherine Corcoran is the author of the new book, In the Mouth of the Wolf, A Murder, A Cover-Up, and the True Cost of Silencing the Press. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Scott. It's been a pleasure.